At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Plevi, plevi besrashna, gordetsie, servniecht mari, revolu, tsi nadeshta, skuksukvir, rifsek ludyi.
Oh my god.
And welcome to Shift F1, a podcast about speedy race cars. I'm Drew Scanlon.
I'm Danny. I thought you and it was like you and Rob changed the podcast so that you do the entire podcast in the language of the local race. That was like five times longer than any one of those you've ever done.
Yes, it is. Well, I wanted to welcome you back in magnificent fashion, Danny O'Dwyer.
Thank you. What was it you said?
That means fly fearlessly, the pride of the northern seas, the hope of revolution, the essence of the belief of all people.
Is this like the Russian Navy? Like
close. It is the theme to The Hunt for Red October. And I know it so well because I listened to that song a lot. And actually, it must have been like a really lazy weekend, because one weekend in high school, this is maybe giving you an insight into what high school Drew is like. I sat down and like phonetically transcribed the lyrics of that.
Oh my god!
So I don't know any Russian. That's all just...
You just have that in your head.
That's just in my head.
That's a beautiful thing. That's like, are you sure you're not like a Russian sleeper agent or something?
No, I'm not sure.
Every time the race comes around, that just pops back into your head.
I'm activated.
It would make sense.
Welcome back.
You did get to North Korea. I was always wondering how you got in, so now it all starts to make sense. Thanks.
True.
Thank you. I'm so bummed that I'm back, because now I don't get to listen. Because I really enjoyed listening, and Rob is fantastic.
Rob is fantastic.
We should keep that guy around.
Yeah, we were thinking of making this a three-man podcast, which I think would be really, really fun. Rob, unfortunately, couldn't join us this week, but in the future, yeah, we were planning on doing a three-man.
Yeah, Menage F1, we're going to call it. We're going to rename it all over again.
Second name change.
Here hey, man, I can do dad jokes now. Legally,
it's
I'm
true.
Allowed.
How's that going?
It's great. I have a baby girl. She's 2 months and 2 days, I think, now, old, and... she's great. She's doing wonderful. Mom is doing great. She's a big, beautiful girl. She's in the 100th percentile for height and head size. So at least she's consistent with her massiveness. And she has a full head of hair like all the O'Dwyer babies. So she's super rad.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Turns out watching F1 races is really easy because they just sleep all day. So all I've done is like it's almost impossible to plan anything. So doing a podcast, impossible, because something would happen and I'd have to help mom or help her or whatever. But the amount of hours of nothing to do I have had, especially during the first 4 weeks, like, geez, I was like dying for stuff. I've watched every sport under the sun. I played like 150 hours of Bloodborne. It was something else, but it was great. So I actually got to watch all the races and then listen to the podcast before and / after when it worked out. And it was pretty good. And I'm super bummed that the race that I get to talk about is Singapore.
Well, let's just get it out of the way then,
sure.
Shall we?
Yeah.
Did you watch qualifying?
I did not. I watched the highlights on the F1.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot noteworthy happened. It was kind of a toss-up for the top six, which was fun to watch. Like, any one of them, it seemed, could have had it.
Right.
And Verstappen actually would have had it, but Hamilton absolutely crushed everyone.
Yeah, he was like 6 tenths faster when he came through or something, I remember. He was like miles ahead of everyone.
Yeah, he was. But actually, Verstappen managed to get within 3 tenths of him.
Right.
Which then meant Verstappen was 3 tenths ahead of Vettel, who came in third. But Toto Wolff, who never gets on the radio, did for this one and said, "Lewis, this is Toto. This was the most epic lap I have ever seen around here."
I like it. I like Lewis when he's got a fire under his arse, and he definitely does. I was a really good interview with him a couple of days ago where he was talking about how he has this like need to win every race. Like, he really feels the pressure this year. Kind of reminds me a bit of the Rosberg year, right? Where like he wasn't getting the points. He was getting chipped away at, and then come end of the season, he's in second place. I think he feels that this year, wanting to sort of solidify his lead as much as he can.
Yeah. So to, I guess, round out the rest of the grid here, we've got, Lewis Hamilton on top, followed by Verstappen, Vettel. Bottas is in fourth, and then Raikkonen and Ricciardo. Behind them is Perez, Grosjean, Ocon, and Hülkenberg, rounding out the top 10. Just outside is Alonso, Sainz, Leclerc, Ericsson, Gasly in 15th. Then we got Magnussen, Hartley, Van Dorn, Sorokin, and Stroll starting 20th. You want to take us through the start here?
Sure. I mean, the two sort of things that everyone's always worried about, those first couple of corners, the turn 1, 2, and probably 3, right? That whole little arena section at the bottom of the start finish straight. It's always like, oh, someone's going to rush off, someone's going to break late. There was that crazy crash. Was it last year, the one where Verstappen got tagged? He was on the radio when he got hit. He was like, oh, I just got hit.
Yeah, he's like, I got hit. Oh, I got hit again.
Yeah. I think, I forget who he
Kimi hit, I think.
They got sandwiched.
Verstappen got squeezed between Kimi and Vettel, and that kicked Raikkonen further into Vettel and like crashed all of them out. And then Fernando Alonso was in there somewhere.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah. Anyway, this time they actually all got through there, except for it was Perez that tapped Ocon, right? Ocon tried to go around the outside of Perez, and he got basically shunted, like little bit of a wheel slap up and into the outer wall, which it finished his race, completely ruined his front right suspension.
But Ocon's, yeah.
Yeah. Perez said on the radio, I believe he said, like, he didn't see him, which...
Yeah, he said...
Yeah, I could imagine that.
Yeah, after the race, he said, it was a very unfortunate incident, one of those that is very hard to avoid. I don't know. As I'm picking up the power, I just get a clip from one car. I did not even realize it was Esteban. And then I get the message from the team, and I was very sorry for that. Ocon said, I'm not going... This is right after the race. Right after the incident, actually. I think during the race. I'm not going to comment or analyze what happened. I got a great start and had a good opportunity with good grip to go around Checo, which, if you don't know, that's Perez. And the next thing I felt was a hit, and I was in the wall.
There's that old, I don't know, it was an old saying, or I remember somebody saying something along the lines of, when you're overtaking around a corner, it's as important to overtake around that corner as it is the corner that's coming up. And the problem that he had was he was overtaking around the outside. Like, I'm sure he definitely had space off the inside there, but he was going nowhere. The track tightens up there on the right. So it's, unless the other car is going to give him acres of space leading up to that wide right that comes up, he was always going to be sort of driving into a closing part of the track, if you get me. So it was a weird place to attempt an overtake anyway, especially in traffic.
It's tough. Like, I don't have the instinct of a driver, but when you watch the onboard, it's like, man, there's a lot of space there. I could see why he went for that.
And that's the problem, right? It's like, course you go for it because it's sitting there.
Yeah,
maybe it's there for a reason. I don't know.
Maybe it is, yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame, though, because, man, if he did it on the first couple of turns, there's acres of runoff and he can continue his race, but wrong place, I guess, to crash out.
That wall comes up quick.
Yeah, so he was done and dusted. I think they got a safety car.
Regardless, a safety car did come out, but regardless of that and whose fault it was, team orders have been reinstated for Force India.
Oh, really?
After this, the team principal, Omar Safnauer, It's from racefans.net. Described the race as, quote, extremely disappointing. It is unacceptable for teammates to hit each other, and it has cost us dearly. They didn't leave each other enough room, and the contact put Esteban into the wall. We will reinstate the rules of engagement we operated last year after similar incidents, which means they cannot race each other.
Right.
So you have lost your privileges, children.
Yeah, I mean, Perez, if he thought he was going to get a slap on the wrist for that one or got away with it, he was going to have another reason later in the race to feel the brunt of the team. The safety car came, but not quite quick enough for Max Verstappen, eh?
Yeah, so Vettel actually got by him into turn 7 after beating him on the straight. This is still all on lap 1.
Yeah, he did it like almost... go ahead.
Well, yeah, he just got a better exit from the prior turn, I think.
Yeah. It was almost like inevitable. It felt like just the straight line speed of that Ferrari. He was gobbling them up as they were coming up to that turn. And then by the end of the straight, he was well past him.
Yeah, I mean, Red Bull, I guess, is traditionally, or at least for the past few years, historically not great at the straights. But on this race in particular, they put in, I think they put in a new spec of their engine from Monza and Singapore, and they've been having problems with it. And so there was some weird software stuff going on for this race, for Verstappen at least. So who knows if that may have played into it.
Right. But then, yeah, safety car. And I was, what happened? Was it Vettel came in? A couple of them came
so,
in? Verstappen
came in? Yeah, so Vettel's in second at this point. Not much happens on the restart. You know, it happens about you know, 3 or 4 laps later after that first lap crash. But Vettel on lap 15 pits from second place, intending to undercut Hamilton, who was in first.
Right.
Right. So Vettel's trying to pit first, get a blistering outlap on those new tires. And hopefully when Hamilton comes in for his tires, Vettel has then made up time on him enough to pass him when Hamilton exits the pits. So Vettel comes in, goes on to ultra soft tires from his hyper softs. Does a good stop, 2.7 second pit stop. I guess it's fine. And rejoins in 7th.
Yeah, it's just 2 points. It's another 3 seconds to change 4 tires. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's
great. But Vettel's also racing for Verstappen.
Yes.
Who's in 3rd and right behind him. And the lap 15, not a lot of, you know, separation has happened quite yet.
Right.
And Verstappen pits 3 laps later, goes on to the soft tire, does a 2.5 second stop, and after a close shave at the pit exit, comes out ahead of Vettel.
It's beautiful. It's something like, you know, like those Twitter accounts that are like just, there's non-aesthetic things, but then it's just like aesthetic. Like it just looks good. Seeing those two cars come out and just like like two swans dancing in a lake around those, that corner. I think, I'm trying to think of another pit exit. I think maybe Abu Dhabi might be close as well, with like watching them coming out of the tunnel and the other one coming out at top speed. Maybe okay, Canada, yeah. Just the way it rejoins. But the exit there is so good. And just seeing him come out, I don't think I've ever seen that happen at that exit. And it's like almost purpose made for it. And Verstappen loved it because he was on the radio. Just, what did he go, like, woohoo or something?
Yeah, yes!
And they got given out to.
Yeah. So, yeah, Ferrari's strategy, I guess, was a double failure, because not only did they not get ahead of Hamilton, they lost out to Verstappen.
Yeah. It's almost like they didn't see that coming or something.
Yeah. Lap 27, good scrap between Gasly and Leclerc for 9th place. Gasly struggling on his hypersoft tires. But Leclerc started on the ultra soft, so his were in better shape, I guess. But Leclerc does get by with a nice switcheroo into 9th place. I always love that. It's like you go for the outside of a turn and can't do it that way. But because you're on the outside, you can then cut across the corner and pass them on the inside. It's a really cool move.
I love it, especially in these street circuits too, where the margin for error is just so slight.
Yeah, everything's really narrow and stuff. See, lap 34, Perez gets stuck behind Sorokin after a pit stop on lap 15 and tries to get around him for like 20 laps.
I know. Doesn't he complain to Charlie Whiting at one stage?
Yeah, he says something like, here we go. Charlie's not doing anything about him, huh? He really wants me to crash?
You're racing like, for position.
Yeah, he's not a back marker. You can't blue flag him.
Bizarre. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah.
I mean, people are complaining about the roughing the passer stuff in NFL. Like, people are getting soft. Jesus Christ, you're racing for... I mean, it wasn't even for, like... It was for, like, what, 13th place or something?
13th place, yeah.
But he couldn't get past him. I mean, it's his fault you can't get past him, or it's Sorokin's ability to stop you getting past him. And then what happened next is, like, I haven't seen what happened next happen since Vettel in Baku with Hamilton. He just rammed him off the road.
Yeah, so I think Perez just gets frustrated and goes for it on the outside of a turn. And then as they go onto a straight, he manages to pull ahead of Sorokin and then suddenly just, like, swerves into him.
It's bizarre.
Like, he's only a couple of feet, like, their noses are only, he's only a couple of feet ahead of Sorokin and just, like, turns and crashes into him. It looks so weird.
Like, was the idea to try and cut off the corner so he couldn't, on, you know, get... He turns so early. It's like he's, like, halfway down the straight when he does it. And, like, it's just... It's completely bananas. It's not even a wheel-to-wheel tap. Like, he ends up, like, getting his assembly... Both of their cars, the barge boards get... I think Perez looked like he got worse for wear out of the two of them right away.
Yeah. So Sorokin continues on, but Perez sustains a lot of damage and is handed a drive-through penalty.
Right. Hulkenberg gets past him right away. So does, I think, most of the people behind him, Grosjean. And...
Yeah, he kind of plummets. But after the race, Perez said, as I was going through on him, Sorokin, I tried to close the door, but I think... He was too close there.
Oh, Jesus
I have
Christ.
To see the incident, but I probably closed the door earlier than I should have to double check. But I think it was fair, the penalty that he received.
You can say that maybe that could be the case. Sergio Perez has, we've seen this pattern with him of him losing the rag a little bit and doing harsh things. Like, it's happened. So he gets testy on the radio as well sometimes. And that it just seemed meant, like, I don't, like, these drivers drive in terms of inches, like, they're that particular. So if you watch the, like, there's one particular angle that's from, like, pretty far back looking in the straight where it's just like, what? Like, you were never turning for the corner. Like,
yeah,
you need a wide angle on that corner kind of anyway to get around it. It's the bridge. So, like, it's not like you can just swan up on the inside and then turn the F1 car 90 degrees on a dime. Like, he'd never want to be that close. So I don't know. I wonder what he was actually doing. I wonder, did he just ram him? Like, was he just like, give him a bit of a shunt? Kind of looked like it.
Like, maybe, but, like, it wasn't even
fiber.
Close.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like his back wheel just clipped off a little bit of his front wing. Right. No, he had, like, just passed him, and he just takes him out.
It's like side by side, It's like what you do in, like a multiplayer F1 game. Or, like,
right.
Just, like, ramming when damage is not unrealistic. You know, he just, like, rammed into them.
Yeah, Sorokin said after the race that, I mean, he was able to continue, but he says, after that, obviously, I had no pace. It was kind of undrivable to be able to be fighting properly.
Right.
So let's see. Speaking of calling for blue flags, lap 38.
Oh, yeah.
Hamilton was ahead of Verstappen by about 3.5 seconds before this. But as Hamilton is working his way through back markers, that shrinks to about 1.5 seconds.
It's crazy. He's on his gearbox by the time they get past.
Yeah, so Hamilton reaches Grosjean, who is at that point battling Sorokin for 14th place and loses even more time to Verstappen as those guys duke it out in front of him.
Yeah.
Grosjean eventually ends up ahead of Sorokin and works a little more to defend his position. Which makes it even harder for Hamilton to pass him as a backmarker. And by this time, Verstappen is right on his tailpipe. So
it was crazy. It could have gone way worse. Hamilton's lucky that by the time he got past Grosjean was enough of a problem for Verstappen on the last corner that Hamilton ended up gaining probably about 2 seconds of that back. But it could have been, like, you had a situation where Hamilton slowing down for the car in front, where Verstappen could have, like, darted on the inside and overtaken both of them. Like, it looked like it was going to happen. It ended up evening out, but It was crazy. And I mean, like, I was kind of like wondering what people would think about that. Apparently, like, that's just, that's fine. That's racing, which I like. Like, that's, you know, they were fighting for, it's 14th, but it's still something. You know?
That's my, that's kind of where I come down on this, but the stewards did not agree.
Oh, they did? Okay, really?
Grosjean earned a 5-second time penalty during the race.
Oh, he did.
Earned 2 points on his license.
Oh, he did. Oh, wow. Okay.
So he is now, according to racefans.net, up to a total of 9 penalty points. Drivers are automatically given 1 race bans if they reach 12 penalty points in a 12-month period. And the most severe incidents have been punished with up to 3 penalty points. So he got 2 for this. And after the race, he said, "I'm sorry if I blocked anyone. It was not my intention. I believe I did my best. I was fighting with Sergey, who was doing a little bit of go-kart racing out there. I couldn't really slow down. Pierre was on my gearbox, and Sergey was on my front wing. I passed him, and then as soon as I passed him, I let Lewis by." Right. Which, like, I totally, you know, again, not a racing driver, but I was like, yeah, you run your own race, totally fine. But Charlie Whiting said after the race, this also from racefans.net, "Roman just completely forgot the golden rule of blue flags, and that's if you're in a battle, you've got to forget your own battle and move over.
Right.
I've drilled that into them many times. I think he completely forgot about it. He was so intent on his battle with Sorokin that he just didn't... The light panels were flashing with his race number on them. Lewis was much faster. It was probably one of the worst cases of ignoring blue flags that I've seen for a long time."
Oh, he's not having a great year. That's funny, because I guess I was listening to Martin Brundle on the F1 TV stuff, and he was like, "Yeah, this is great." So I didn't. That's amazing.
I thought it was great too. Yeah, I mean, even Toto Wolff like had a diplomatic quote. He said, "The first moment you're angry that you've lost the gap, but you need to accept that these guys are fighting for position, trying to have their own best race. You have to respect that. I think the drivers need to discuss it among themselves that if the leaders come and it's close, maybe they should have the more global perspective of what's happening behind them. And I think in a racing car, sometimes you don't know what's happening. You just see the leader coming and are fighting for your own position. You have to respect everyone's struggle to perform."
There you go.
So
did he say that after the race was over?
Yes.
Easier to say.
He pounded a few tables.
It was a brief moment of entertainment in an otherwise rather uneventful latter half of the race. Like, apart from the Perez incident and that, it was a bit of a procession.
The only thing I have after that is lap 47, Sorokin forces Hartley off the track with one of the most egregious moves I have ever seen. Sorokin himself almost drove into the wall, making it happen.
Yeah.
And so he not only received a 5-second time penalty for that, but also 2 license points.
Oh, he did.
So he is now at a total of 6.
Yeah, Hartley, I think, did really well to not end up getting his wing clipped there, like into the wall.
Yeah.
He said something like he tried to drive him off the track or something, right? I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. What a day. So, Sergei Sorokin in the wars.
Yeah, no kidding. A lot of people had Perez had a pretty bad day.
Yeah.
Sorokin had a bad day. The one who didn't have a bad day, though, Lewis Hamilton on top, followed by Max Verstappen, Sebastian Vettel, Valtteri Bottas, Kimi Raikkonen, and Daniel Ricciardo. If that sounds familiar, it's the way the top 6 started. behind them, Fernando Alonso, up from 11th place, gets 7th place.
Points in his last race there, probably.
Yeah, probably. In 8th place is Sainz, followed by Leclerc and Hülkenberg, rounding out the top 10. Behind them, we've got Ericsson, Van Dorn, Gasly, Stroll, Grosjean, Perez, Hartley, Magnussen, and Sorokin, with Ocon going out of the race with an accident. So a lot of teams do like a debrief on their their own websites. Like, here's Williams's debrief from the Singapore Grand Prix. Ferrari did one of these as well, and the headline on their website was "Boredom the winner in Singapore."
Oh my God! Wow.
They later changed it to "Positions unchanged," but. I thought that was pretty good.
Wow. That's That's something else. I feel like it's always an interest. I mean, I still think we're on 100% for safety cars at this race, at the very least.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It seemed like a particularly uninteresting. There was nothing at the front except for that Vettel Verstappen bit. There was hardly any battling at the front. It felt like it was just kind of this whatever was going on in the mid pack. There was a couple of incidents, and that was kind of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit of a shame. It's weird, right? Because I feel with Ricardo sort of in his transitional period a bit, and Kimi wasn't really fighting hard in the first place, and now he's, you know, obviously losing the seat too. Like, it feels a little bit like some of the edge is off the top, you know. Like Verstappen's kind of getting a little bit away from them. Bottas isn't exactly fighting for the championship. It's just kind of Vettel and Hamilton and. There's a couple of other like some of the interesting battles aren't happening at the top. They're kind of happening lower down.
Yeah. One other side note I noticed for this race was that the for whatever reason I noticed it the most on this race, the cameras tended to focus a lot this time on female crew members.
I don't
remember seeing this many in past races, which I thought was cool. Didn't feel gross to me the way that it usually does when it's very clearly a direction to the cameras to like find the hot girl in the crowd.
Totally.
Like
it wasn't that
is so transparent to me, but this one felt more like, hey, look, women work here too. Let's not ignore that.
Yeah, it was cool, and what I thought it stood out to me as well because. It happened a couple of times and I was like, are they showing the same person? But like, that's weird. But then I was looking at the jumpsuits and stuff and I was like, oh no, these are like different people working in different garages.
There were two of them on Force India. So yeah, right. You're right.
But yeah, that was pretty cool. That was, two of us being video production sort of nerds. I wonder whether that is like part of a strategy, because you would have a strategy for crowds, for instance. You'd have like, oh, get this, this, and this for the people getting the like general views of the crowds or whatever. That'd be pretty cool if it was just like a, you know, inclusivity sort of like, yo, let's like highlight this aspect of our sport that probably people don't realize.
Yeah, because like I gotta imagine that, you know, a young girl watching Formula One would be super jazzed to see like, oh, if there's women in the pit crew, like I could do this.
Right. Like that's women awesome. Engineers, women team leaders, you know what I mean? Women test drivers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's that's pretty cool.
Let's move on to the news, Danny. You already alluded to some driver switching going on.
The lemon dance has started.
What is that?
That's a term. It's in a documentary called Waiting for Superman. It's what they call when you're swapping bad teachers between schools. It's like one school gives another school their lemons and another one gives their lemons. So bad teachers never leave the system. They just get swapped to different schools. It's called the lemon dance. So I shouldn't say that because these aren't lemons, although some of them might be.
Well, first up, we've got a new driver in for Sauber, which means Ericsson is unfortunately out, but he will stay on as a third driver.
Yes, he will.
Slash brand ambassador, whatever that means.
He's going to commit acts of brandalism all over the F1 circuit.
But that new driver in for Sauber is one Antonio Giovinazzi.
I was so happy for you when I saw who was coming back.
It's
going
to be a long 2019.
Right? Has he only raced that one race? Because he did come
two.
In... Two races.
Race two. Okay. He filled in for Wehrlein for the first two races in 2017 while Wehrlein was recovering from injuries sustained during the Race of Champions.
Yes, and he did all right. I remember in that first race, he came like 12th.
Yeah, he made up places. He's also done practice sessions. He's part of the Ferrari Reserve Driver Program and has done practice sessions with Sauber, Ferrari, and Haas.
Yeah.
And I guess a little more on his resume. He in 2016, he finished second in GP2 to Pierre Gasly. And in 2015, he finished second in European Formula 3 to Felix Rosenquist, who now races in Formula E. And will be the first full-time Italian driver since Jarno Trulli and...
Wow.
Vitantonio Liuzzi?
Yes, Liuzzi. Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know.
I wasn't watching in 2011. But,
right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So
not for Ferrari, but you know.
a Ferrari engine. And he's racing next to Kimi Raikkonen, which will
be cool. That I like the look of that team. That's a fun team. That's like, it's like the young upstart and the protege and the mentor who doesn't give a shit. Like, it's like the reluctant mentor, you know, like, teach me how to be a hunter. Get away, kid. It's kind of like that like trope.
God of War.
Yeah, it's basically Boy and Kratos.
I from what little we've been able to glean of Raikkonen's feelings on this, it seems like the pressure is going to be off and he's going to be able to have fun and race.
So great.
I'm happy for him.
He'll have his Fernando Alonso years.
I don't know. I think Alonso really wanted McLaren to be great. I think Kimi knows that Sauber is going to be okay, but he'll have a good time doing it.
I think it'll be an interesting dynamic as well, because Giovinazzi has always been this sort of up and coming force for a while. Like, it's always been like, when is he going to get his shot a bit? So it'll be interesting to see what the gap is like from number one to number two driver in that respect.
Yeah.
Like, will he be more hungry? Like, obviously he would be more hungry, right? It'll be weird to see Kimi not, you know, in a way it'll be weird. It'll be like Kimi 6 years ago, I guess. We'll see him back in the middle of the pack and getting in scraps with people.
Yeah.
So they're locked up anyway.
Yeah. Teams who have not confirmed their drivers: Haas, Force India, Toro Rosso, and Williams. Neither drivers are confirmed on any of those.
Right. Well, so before all the Force India, because we haven't talked since all the Force India drama happened as well, I believe. Mm-hmm. So when, like, did anything change there? Were they signed?
So
and then it went, now that it's a new company, it's not anymore, or?
That's probably what's delaying stuff. But Perez said that his contract has been locked for a while.
Okay.
And it is likely that he'll be announced for Force India this weekend. Also, the rumor, according to BBC and ESPN F1 journalist Jenny Gao on Twitter, is saying that Toro Rosso has signed one Danny the Torpedo Cafiat.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yes. And they are expecting an official announcement at the Russian Grand Prix.
Instead of Ocon.
Yeah, so Ocon's a weird one because he's still under contract at Mercedes.
Oh, right. Of course.
He's part
of
their program. So no way is Toro Rosso going to be able to touch him.
God, if they announced Danny at the scene of his career-ending crash, they should have him sign the contract on turn three in Sochi with Sebastian Vettel
giving him the pen.
Exactly. Wow, that'd be. That would be kind of cool. I did feel bad for him that his career got sort of ended so young. But I'm also sort of surprised. Like,
he was in it for a few years. You know who is not, or is rather an outgoing driver from the Mercedes program, however?
It's whom?
Is Pascal Wehrlein.
Okay, right.
So he is also kind of in the picture for Toro Rosso.
Okay.
Which I think would be really cool. The guy won the DTM championship. Okay. And then raced for Manor. And just absolutely languished at the back of the field. So right. I always felt bad for him. So I would like to see more of Wehrlein. So that would be quite an interesting team, Cafiat and Wehrlein for Toro Rosso.
What do we think about Williams then? Like, who'd stay on?
Sorokin's
got 1 point.
Well, and if, you know, Stroll goes to Force India because his dad owns the team now.
Right.
There's definitely a seat open there. I don't know if so, like, Williams and Mercedes have like a close partnership, or they have in the past, because Toto Wolff is like a part owner in Williams, and
it's because they're all of F1 is inbred.
Yes, that. And he Toto is also like a, I think he's like a personal, not a manager, but he's like close with Ocon.
Okay.
But also in the Mercedes program is the current Formula 2 points leader, George Russell, Okay. He's a British driver, so maybe him as well.
Hmm. Have do you say Toro Rosso? Have they confirmed next year's?
No, neither.
Okay.
So yeah, it could be Kvyat Verline.
I feel like Hartley is on super thin ice.
Yeah. I feel like they're probably waiting. Like, I'm sure, I think the way that these contracts work is like, you must have this many points
right
by this time to stay on for another year. And if that doesn't happen, well, then you're out.
So yeah, I mean, he could
imagine that's what's going on.
He could win Russia and he'd still be behind Gasly at this stage, his teammate. So, like, yeah, he's only got 2 points to his name at the moment. And Pierre's got 28. So it's not looking good, like to like, you know. Just didn't come together for him, I guess. His return, yeah, or his late career entry into F1,
yeah,
or at least into one of the first two seats in F1.
Also in other driver stuff, Alonso tweeted a weird video with him and NASCAR's Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah, it was weird.
They were like calling each other on their phones, being like, "Hey, what's up?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be fun to like, if you came over and raced NASCAR, and what do you got going over there across the pond? I don't know. Stay tuned.
I got deck chairs. Do you want to sit in one and watch people driving better cars?" Yeah, it was weird. It reminded me a little bit of those weird commercials he did with Jenson Button when they were in the cars together.
Those are so great.
Please, Jenson.
So strange.
I cannot feel my face.
Jenson.
Yeah,
I'll see if I can find those, put them in the show notes.
They are terrific, but it was a little bit of that, like cheeky, weird acting. There's something about the combination of bad acting and really good cameras that, like, you get like sports stars, like it's like this uncanny sort of combination. Yeah, that was weird. That was a strange Twitter thing.
I don't know, Alonso NASCAR, sure.
Sure, like at this stage, I feel like he'll do anything.
Yeah, like I'd see Fernando Alonso anywhere.
Yeah,
I would watch at least one race.
Motorbikes, get him on a motorbike.
Sure. Speaking of other racing, Formula. I think he was in Formula 4, but he is now in European Formula. I'm sorry, British Formula 3. Billy Monger. The teenage double amputee.
Billy the Wiz? Is that what they call him? I always forget.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Billy Wiz returned to the scene of his accident that took place in April 2017 in Donington Park and got pole position twice.
Yeah.
So this kid is good.
Yeah.
He didn't score that high. He finished as high as third place. But that's super awesome to see. You know, a little more than a year, year and a half after his accident where he lost his legs as a driver, he is now getting pole positions and getting podiums. So
lost his legs and super cool. This is a child. Like this is not, this is a very young
person. 19.
Like, oh boy. Like there's mental strength. Like, I don't know if I'd be able to get back in any car, let alone drive a car that fast again, let alone do it in the exact same spot. Like, boy, fair play to that kid. Like it'll be interesting to see, you know, if he's able to race, if he's, you know, like you learn so much of your craft when you're young, like if he's able to drive an adapted car this well, this young in his career, like maybe that's like, maybe he'll just like, you know, it's not like he has to unlearn a lot if he's young. He's adapting pretty quick and he'll have years behind him of doing this stuff, you know, as he continues into his career. And that's pretty exciting that like this genuinely might turn around what he's doing. Like he might actually be able to make a career still out of it by virtue of the fact that it happened to him during such a young age and technology has come so far and he's so skillful. It's crazy. But yeah, the pictures of him, I saw floating on Twitter or something, or maybe race fans or something. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, so congrats to you, Billy Wiz. Hope to see you racing in the future
for sure.
And last bit here, Danny, I'm hoping you can help me a little with this.
Is it about changing nappies? Sorry, diapers. Diapers.
They're called nappies.
Nappies, man. Okay. It turns out all the like English American things that are different, it's all in the baby stuff. Like a pram, you guys call a stroller.
Mm-hmm.
Nappies, and then like doties, you call them pacifiers. That?
Okay, yeah.
We call them like soothers or doties or something like that. Like, and then just like basically anything you say to a child. Like I'm bouncing around my knee and doing like singing songs that my wife is like, what the fuck is that? Like weird songs. She's like sound weird. You know, like all kids' stories sound weird when you listen to them. You're like, ugh,
yeah,
that's messed up. Jack and Jill fell down the hill. It sounds like they really hurt themselves. Yeah, it's all that sort of stuff. Anyway, sorry.
This has nothing to do with that.
Damn it.
Formula One, the world's most prestigious motor racing competition, today announces a groundbreaking sponsorship and data rights commercial partnership with Interregional Sports Group, ISG, to produce an F1 betting offering and give fans new ways to get closer to the sport they love.
Uh-oh.
Sports betting, Danny.
Live sports betting, probably.
Yes, live in-play betting. I think I'm assuming here that I don't have as much of I can't wrap my head around why this is angering people, which it seems to be on Twitter and Reddit and everywhere else that I've looked on my Formula One stuff, because maybe because I'm American. Like, I don't see a lot of sports betting on other things that I watch. I know it happens. I know it's like a thing in Vegas. I know there are websites. But it seems very transparent to me. So I'm hoping that you, as a European, I've heard this happened with soccer also recently.
Yeah. So there's two things here. One is the sort of culture of betting in Europe is definitely very, very different than it is here in the States.
Okay.
I feel like most of the betting that happens in this country, probably outside of, you know, just normal things like horse racing, which is a betting type sport, is like that sort of like, you know, prize fight, UFC fight, stuff like that, you know, the Vegas events and things like that. Betting is pretty ubiquitous across lots of sports in Europe, and people do it more like the way, like, there are no casinos. There's less casino and that type of stuff in Europe, so betting is more pervasive, I guess. I think it was in the late 70s or 80s is when a lot of, especially in the UK and Ireland, that a lot of betting shops appeared, like bookies and stuff, like established bookies, and they generally tended to be in lower income parts of the world, or of the city. They tend to appear in the same place that like payday loans shops is now the big thing, especially in the UK. Like, I lived in a bunch of low income parts of London when I was there, and all those things popped up. So the bet in play stuff is. It's kind of like a new phenomenon. It's like the latest version of that. So if you watch like football, for instance, soccer in the UK, all the ads will be completely covered in betting stuff from Ladbrokes, and like even Sky, the broadcaster, has their own. Betfair does all of these different ones. And what you get now as well is there's kind of two things that happen. One is the bet and play. So you'll get commercials at halftime saying like, oh my God, if Everton swing back and win this game, they score two goals, then you'll get this rate. And then the other thing is there are these new sort of apps and services that allow you to bet not against the house, but bet against other people, like your bet against their bet. So obviously betting and gambling and all of this sort of stuff, everyone loses in the end. Like, the house always wins. That's the way it goes. Yeah. It's part of the play. People like to kid themselves. Some people make money out of it, but at the end of the day, it is a negative. It's a dirty thing. And like, I don't like seeing betting ads on football. It's gross and awful, and it reminds me of,
in the way that you're describing it being constantly upsold to you.
Yes.
Is above and beyond what normal advertising would be. Like, there's the thing about there are betting ads, and then there's the continual upsell, which is another level.
Yeah, you're literally watching an ad, which I don't know how they develop them, but like the rate is on the ad, like this got spat out of a computer or is being live rendered in this moment. They'll say like, this is the current rate on this bet. So I'm not sure how you surface that in a sport which is largely commercial free, or at least break free like that. But it's just like, I don't know if people on Reddit or anywhere have specific complaints about this or about the specific companies who are doing them. But as somebody who has lived in that ecosystem, like I used to work, like I worked at a dog track, like I worked at a greyhound track, and sometimes I'd be working on the tables upstairs where the rich people were, with a live machine, and then sometimes I'd be in the pit, which is the bottom where all the working class people were. And like gambling is fucking awful. Like I like gambling's bad. That sort of like betting is, it's the worst. Like people bet their kids' like dinner the next day, and that's what bookies are all about. And that's also, unfortunately, a large amount of the people who do it on sports betting, especially the bet and play stuff, because it's basically like, oh, this, it's an offer. It's like fear of missing out. Like the whole thing, it's all FOMO.
Sure.
So if you're away from the bet, if you're at home, usually, if you're not at the bookies, then you can't, you're not there. Like you call up the bookies, but no one does that anymore. But like, it's a basically a new way of like making it so that people are completely bombarded. The weakest people in our society are bombarded with the fact that they can bet at any moment in time. So that's the reason I would be against. I'm not sure if that's what people on the internet are saying, but the idea of them bringing this shit into F1 is just like, it's gross and awful and it doesn't benefit anyone. Maybe it's because it's a wealthier sport. Maybe it's more middle class people watch it and it's not so bad, but it's like I don't want any of this stuff to do with F1. It's just gross.
I agree. Hopefully, I mean, I don't really have any reason to hope that this will happen, but hopefully it's not as egregious, in your face as you're describing, but who knows? We'll see.
Hmm.
All right, that's all I got for news. Let's take it to the track walk for this weekend. Danny,
next this weekend.
Sochi Autodrome.
We're in Sochi again. We're in Sochi for the fifth time. It was 2014 is when we had it first. So it's 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. I'm correct. The fifth time. This, of course, is the Sochi Autodrome, built in the same place that they had the Olympics. Which is somewhere up in the beautiful, up near the coast. It's warm, apparently, there up in Russia. Cost like $200 million to build the thing. It's an interesting course. It's the fourth longest, I believe, 5.6. I want to say just shy of that, kilometers in length. It's clockwise. It's got 12 right-handers and 6 left-handers, 2 DRS straights. I called them straights. Neither of them are actually straight. We'll get that to that in a second. It's an interesting track because it's obviously a circuit, but it has elements of it that are very street coursey. It has a lot of high walls directly on the side of the track. There are runoffs. In fact, it has one area that's got an incredibly large runoff. And I don't know. It's not the most interesting course. There's no really way of buttering it up. There's sort of two main overtaking areas, which are at the end of either straight. And then it's kind of like a lot of arena style turns, like, you know, double apex turns and right lefters and stuff like that. And like short little bursts of speed before a 90 degree turn. Not unlike a lot of street circuits, actually. Not unlike a lot of Baku, actually. Yeah. Part of it reminds me there.
It does have one like horseshoe shaped turn, which I think goes around the Olympic Park.
Oh, I forgot about that. You're right. Yeah.
Or like that big old circle with a bunch of flags and stuff. It's super long. And it is that sort of like, they actually list it as two turns. It's like got a little kink at the front and then goes for like it's basically like a semicircle before hitting another 90 degree turn.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
And I think is the site, the site of Kvyat's double hit on Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, that's where they came to blows, as it were. There's a lot of sort of fake turns. In fact, I remember in previous years looking up this circuit and finding, I think, 3 or 4 different numbers of corners that are on this. It's officially listed as 18, but I've seen ones listed as 17, 19, and 20, just because of all the weird double apexes they have. I mean, the first turn is taken flat out. It's on the main straight. It's not really a turn. It's just kind of... like a bend. I don't know, 20 degree dent. Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. And then once they get down to the bottom, then to turn 2, that turns into that crazy horseshoe, like a semicircle taking a chunk, like somebody's taking a bite out of the side of the circuit.
Yeah, it does look like that. Yeah.
And then it's kind of a little bit higgledy piggledy. There's a couple of corners, right, left handers. It's all quite boring. The next sort of section is the lead up to turn 14, which is, or turn 13 rather, which is the one after the DRS straight. Again, it's not a straight, it's actually a sort of a right-handy long turn, but it's got a DRS zone on there, and the braking zone into turn 13 is really interesting because the track kind of cambers down on the opposite side a little bit, so you kind of have to throw yourself into the corner. It's a pretty flat circuit. There's not much in the way of topographical change. Grip here is usually really high. The weather here is usually on the hot side as well. I'm not sure if I feel like we've had rain once. I feel like there was a rain race and it was really interesting. I can't remember exactly. But there's been incidents here. You mentioned the Vettel and Kvyat incident. This is also where, remember, Kimi and Bottas had a crash on the final lap here? Yeah. That was fun. In fact, last year was the... Remember this? I rewatched the last year's race. This was one of my favorite Kimi team radios was when they said Bottas is in front of you, and he's like, how is Bottas in front of me? What happened? Bottas, I thought, what happened to the strategy? And they were like, Bottas was leading the race. And he was like, oh, sorry, I got my Mercedes mixed up. it was absolutely amazing. I loved it. So I don't know. It's not exactly a classic. There's been a couple of interesting... I think if memory serves me, the first couple of races were interesting enough. But we've had a couple of more pedestrian ones. Like the tires don't really play a factor here, so it's more of the driver, I guess, incident or driver work. And the sort of for a track with 18 turns to have two main places where most of the overtakes happen, it doesn't set you up for a great race. But you know, you never know. This is F1. Sometimes the good tracks give you boring races, and sometimes the boring ones give you good races.
That's true. Well, speaking of tires, we've got hypersoft, ultrasoft, and soft tires for this race. Tire stress on this track, Pirelli has rated it a 2 out of 5. Lateral forces are a 3. Downforce is a 4. Grip is a 3, and abrasion is a 2. You're right. I think because it's mostly a parking lot.
Yeah. New circuit, too. I'm sure that makes a big difference. I think, did they resurface it last year? I remember there was something last year.
You could be right.
Somewhere got resurfaced last year. For some reason, I think it's here, but maybe not.
Temperatures for the race weekend look pretty nice, actually. 24, 25 Celsius mid to high 70s in Fahrenheit. Precipitation. Yeah, low chance of precipitation on qualifying and race day. Humidity, though, in the high 60s, which is gross. Mm.
Dude, try living in Maryland. Boy. Swamp thing.
Yeah, and only a little bit of wind. But they are right near the Black Sea, so who knows what kind of weather can come off of that thing. It looks to be just balmy. It's also going to be balmy for Lewis Hamilton because he is 40 points ahead of Sebastian Vettel in the driver's standings with 281 points. Vettel's got 241. Raikkonen has 174. Bottas with 171.
Right. They are actually quite close to each other there.
They are. Verstappen is in fifth with 148, followed by Danny Ric with 126. Hulkenberg's got 53. Alonso has 50. Magnussen has 49. Perez has 46.
Yeah.
He's in 10th place. Ocon with 45.
Yep.
Sainz has 38. Gasly's got 28. Grosjean's got 27. Leclerc in 15th place with 15. Van Dorn's got 8. Stroll has 6. He's tied with Marcus Ericsson. Hartley's got 2. And Sorotkin has 1 championship point.
Who knows? His home race, he might score some points.
That's true. ESPN's F1 Twitter account tweeted something. It says, "Look away now, Ferrari fans. We've calculated what the 2018 F1 championship might look like without Vettel's errors."
Oh,
so,
wow.
Currently, Lewis has 281 points and Vettel has 241. Without those errors, Lewis would have 247 and Vettel would have 320.
Right.
So thanks for rubbing that in, ESPN. Mercedes is on top of the constructor standings with 452 points. Ferrari's got 415. Red Bull has 274. Renault is in fourth place with 91. Gene Haas and team have 76 points. McLaren has 58. Force India Racing Point Force India has 32. Scuderia Toro Rosso, with 30. Sauber's got 21, and Williams has a whopping 7.
Yeah, that's got a sting. That 7 is not too great. That's all. At all. You got to be. McLaren got to be happy with that, though. To be sitting in sixth, sitting pretty there after the past couple of years they've had.
Yeah, absolutely. In the Shift F1 Fantasy League, which you can join with the invite code 0B62FE. number one, Speedy McCreadys, still on top, followed by Bobby Gondo Racing, Blue Doze Elite, Bois Party, David Coulthard's Chin, Made in Haas, Scuderia Matteo, Go F1 Yourself, Orange B-King F1, Trendsetters, and Funky Bunch.
Funky Bunch.
Funky Bunch. I am down in 108th place.
I am down in DNF, I think.
You're on dad. Yeah, dad not finishing.
Dad not finishing, no. She's watched a lot of F1 races, though, so... I need to get her like a jersey. I got her like a pigskin onesie thing for watching Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football. So she looks like a football. I should get her like a front wing or something.
Let's take it to the emails. You can email us at f1.cool/emails.
Ooh.
This first one comes in from Travis.
I didn't get fixed while I was away then. Good.
No, you were on Patreon leave. Travis says, hello, longtime listener, first time emailing into the podcast. I just have a quick question. I live in the UK and watch F1 on Sky over here, but I'm heading to the US, San Francisco, on holiday in November. The holiday happens to fall over the Brazilian GP, and I'll get back for the Yas Marina Grand Prix. With the way that the season's shaping up, I don't want to miss a race right at the end. Is there any broadcasting channel over in the States where I will be able to watch the coverage for free? Or is it a subscription-only service? I have F1 TV, but unfortunately here in the UK, you can't stream the races due to Sky's contract. That sucks. Thanks for any info on this. So first of all, F1 TV, if you can't stream them, you... Does that mean...
I think when I
signed
up... You
don't get live, but you can do... race replays, you might be able to do that with a VPN.
I know that you can't. I'm 99% sure that when you sign up, it asks you what region you're signing up for. I remember.
Yeah, and you have to put in like a credit card of that country. Right?
So I think don't think it'll change if you go abroad. I think it'll still give you your UK
right.
stuff.
That was the case for me when I was traveling. But I could use a VPN. And still access my American account.
Could you do it live though?
I didn't try it live, but what I'm saying for Travis is that he might be able to do if he can't catch it live, he can still do the race replay.
Yeah.
Like, after the fact,
which would be such a shame.
I don't know the time delay on that though.
Yeah, it's such a shame because Brazil actually really works out here in the States because it's like almost
the same
time zone. So
yeah,
it's really handy.
So, ESPN is what shows the F1 races, and actually I can look up...
You say he's in San Francisco?
Yeah.
He should go and hang out with the F1 club down there. There's that San Francisco F1 club that were so kind and invited me to so many races, and I just never went to one. I regret it to this day. And they watch they watch somewhere in Soma, somewhere south of Market, so like pretty central in San Francisco.
One. In like the center, I think there's another one that does it. Some pub in the center of the city.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So let me see. Oh, this doesn't tell me what channel it's on. But yeah, ESPN is a pretty ubiquitous channel. It shows up on a lot of lower tier stuff. So if you wanted to go to a pub or something, or if you're staying with somebody you know, or even if you're staying in like an Airbnb or a hotel, they probably have ESPN. The Brazilian Grand Prix looks like it airs on ESPN2.
Right.
Which is not as ubiquitous, but probably will be there. You could call ahead to see if your hotel gets it or your Airbnb. But yeah, it's not as locked behind a paywall as Sky's stuff is.
I found the group. I'm not sure if it's the same group, but I did find a meetup group which is active, which shows the F1 races right around the corner, just off the Panhandle, actually.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking
of.
Yeah,
Stanyan, on Stanyan Street, so just at the edge of Golden Gate Park. So that's in the Haight-Ashbury part of San Francisco. So, if you're a tourist in San Francisco, just go to Haight-Ashbury and you're like a block away from this place. That'd be cool.
You can make a day of that. That's a cool part of the city. What's the F1 club called?
Oh, I just found it on Meetup. It was just called San Francisco F1 Club.
Okay, I'll link it in the show notes.
The San Francisco Formula One Meetup Group.
I think even in America, not every city is going to be like this, but there are F1 fans all over the world. I was able to watch the race live in Kiev.
Right.
I went to an Irish pub.
Perfect.
To watch it. And when I walked in, the lady said, to the left, you have the football, and to the right, you have the formula.
Oh, my God. The formula.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. She has a very Irish accent as well. It's good to know. It's my people's.
So hope that helps.
Yeah. Have fun. That sounds like a blast.
Yeah.
Can I tell you, actually, I'm planning a shoot, a weird shoot for Noclip, for my day job, around a bunch of different cities. It's for next month. But I'm going to be using Austin as my home base. And I did not realize, I was like, oh shit, I wonder if I'll be away for one of the podcasts with Drew. So I better check. And I'm literally in Austin the week of the Grand Prix. So like I totally accidental. And I don't think I'm going to be filming on the weekend. So I'm not going to go to a race or anything.
Get some general admission tickets. They're probably cheaper, right?
But I think I might see if I can do another meetup while I'm in town, if there's any Shift F1 folks that are in town. So leave that with me. I'll figure that out. We have another, we'll have an F1, we'll have another podcast before then, right? That's like 3 weeks away. Let me figure that out. But I'm literally living in Austin for 2 weeks, and it just so happened that the weekend in the middle was the fucking Grand Prix was on. So who knows? We might go to that pub we went to 2 years ago again.
Yeah, that place was cool. I don't remember the name of it, but yeah,
they hated us because 100 people turned up.
sorry, we are helping you sell your drinks.
Right? Yeah, good point.
Final email here from Andrew. He just says, Drew, so I don't know, were you here, Danny, when we learned the unfortunate news that Camping World Truck is changing its name next year?
Sadly, I was there for the traumatic reveal. Yeah.
Ugh. Gandalf Outdoors Truck Series. Andrew says, Drew, I'd like you to know that one of the possible abbreviations for the new NASCAR Gander Outdoor Truck Series is... Go Trucks. G-O Trucks.
I feel 5% better. That's I would be also okay that if you were like you shall not pass, if you rolled into the Gandalf, like whenever you did like a Gandalf voice every time we talked to a Camping World Truck from now on.
Well, apparently I can't say that word without drifting into Gandalf, so yeah. Maybe that'll be it. We already have the Aragorn Grand Prix.
Exactly.
Speaking of racing around the world.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Can I still do it? I've got performance anxiety.
Do it. Do it.
Race around the world.
Oh, it's been so long. I feel recharged. Formula 2 will be supporting Formula 1 in the Sochi International Street Circuit. Ooh. In the Olympic Park, Sochi, Russia.
Ooh.
The World Superbike Championship will be at Circuit Manicur in France.
Beautiful Manicur. He used to be F1 there as well.
And Danny.
Yeah?
Danny.
Oh my God.
That's right.
Old friend. How you been?
Oh, I'm doing just great because we are racing at the Charlotte Motor Speedway Road Course.
Where's that?
It's in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hmm. Are they still doing that? After I hope they're not too waterlogged. I don't know how badly hit Charlotte got, right?
Yeah, hopefully it had a good drainage.
Yeah.
But we're racing for the Bank of America Roval 400.
Whoa. Is that oval with like...
Because it's the road course.
Road oval. Roval.
It's a roval.
It's a... Of course, it's a...
I'm just learning of this now.
Roval.
Yep.
Why would it be a road course if it's an oval? I don't know.
Maybe it's half on an oval?
It's like Sochi. They made a circuit, but they made it a street course for some reason. In Russia, we call it Roval.
Speaking of Russia, and speaking of races that are definitely not friendly to the American time zone.
Whoa.
At least the West Coast one.
You're talking about Russian people here? What's going on?
No. this is at least in Pacific time, first practice. Friday, September 28th at 1 a.m. Second practice, same day, 5 a.m.
Great.
Third practice, Saturday at 2 a.m. Pacific time, qualifying at 5 a.m. And the race, Danny, the Russian Grand Prix, Sunday, September 30th at 4:10 a.m.
I was about to say that's dad time, but that's like 4:10 might be the worst time for anything to be on.
Yes.
Like 3 a.m. is like you can imagine having an all-nighter and getting there. 4 is just too late. 4:10 is that's abusive. Like, and also getting up at 4:10. Like, I can get up at 5. I can imagine that. Or 6 maybe. You know, that's okay. 5, yeah, sure, the sunrise. 4:10. It might be the worst time.
Yeah, that's awful.
It's terrible.
But fine for you because you're on East Coast time, so that'd be a nice 7:10 a.m.
Oh, great. I'll be up for 2 hours already, thanks to my daughter.
I also wanted to shout out Eric DeJong on Twitter for linking us to the inaugural Moto E World Cup calendar confirmed, at least the first 5 races in 2019. Formula E is bonkers, so why not make it even more bonkers with motorcycles?
I did not know this is a thing.
Yeah. We'll be able to see it next year on May 5th for the inaugural race at Jerez. Followed by Le Mans, the Saxon Ring, Austria, and Misano.
Oh, okay. Good mix. That's interesting. Moto E.
Moto
That's going to be terrifying. Did they make like no noise at all? It was like the...
Yeah. They looked like normal motorcycles, though.
Yeah. Because the bikes aren't that loud. The bikes are pretty loud here at the circuits, especially if there's a bunch of them going past. But it's not like... I guess I've never been inside a Formula E car, so I don't know how loud they are. That's funny. Moto E. All right, we're one step closer to Tron.
Almost. Like, yeah. Oh, man. That's totally... It's right there.
Yeah. Light cycles.
The light cycles. Just extend the wheelbase and then lay down while you're racing them.
And then just have a weird wall of light just permeate behind you forever.
You could do that in post.
Yeah.
Just like the yellow line in football.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You can follow at Shift F1 Podcast for show updates and any fun F1 stuff we run across. I'm trying to be good about... You know, tweeting the driver announcements, that kind of stuff. Any big news. Try not to be too spoilery on there.
Yeah.
But I do try to keep up with the news.
I like it. It's helped me a lot over the past couple of months.
Good. I'm at Drew Scanlon.
I'm at Danny O'Dwyer.
At Danny O'Dwyer. Yeah. And you can always find our show notes on F1.cool or your podcast app in the more info. Pain, I guess. Until next time, I'm Drew Scanlon. He's Danny O'Dwyer. If you'd like to support us, we are both on Patreon. Danny at patreon.com/noclip. Me at patreon.com/clothmap. Anything else from you, Danny?
No, not really. Have you... we never got to play... Talk about it, actually. Maybe we shouldn't because of the ads. I don't know. The F1 game. Have you
already talked about it? I mean, Rob wrote a review.
Oh, yes. Of course. Are you playing it much?
Not a lot, although I have downloaded and tried it. And I like the career mode so far. It is unabashedly technical. Like, there is a lot of... like, they actually make a practice session useful. Like, here, drive through these gates and learn the course. I find it really helpful because I'm not gifted with, you know, the... The second nature, you know, knowing how to take a turn, that kind of stuff. So
right.
I'm liking it so far. I haven't really stuck with it. It's been kind of busy around here, so not a lot of time for video games, but yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I got scared away from multiplayer because I did so bad in a race and somebody recognized my gamer tag because it was Danny O'Dwyer. And I was like, and I was so bad that I was like embarrassed that I was like on a podcast about this. And then, so I've like hardly, I've not done much of that since. But I've been, it actually ended up being the perfect game for I'm really tired, but I mind have to mind this baby, because it's like, it's just active enough that you're not like falling asleep. It's not like watching television or anything, but it's like also kind of like brainless enough. Like you go on autopilot, right? Mm-hmm. Like going through, you're just hitting the apexes and managing everything. So I ended up playing lots of it actually, in like big long races and stuff over the break. Yeah, and I really enjoyed it. I'm always flabbergasted by how well they managed to make the analog steering of a control make any sense on a gamepad. It's just insane to me. Like I love playing those games with the wheel, but it actually, because I was in the living room, right, so I was just using a PS4 pad, and yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Codemasters does good work.
Yeah, thank God. You could, there were a lot of years there where there were F1 games that were not wonderful, so yeah, we're spoiled at the moment, I think.
Yeah, agreed. Hopefully we will be spoiled. You know what, I was going to say, hopefully we're going to be spoiled with a great race this weekend, but I didn't want to jinx it. Although Rob tried to like reverse jinx us by saying the Singapore Grand Prix is going to be boring. So
right.
He was totally right. So
yeah, turns out he's just too smart for his own good.
Well, we will be back next week for the post-Sochi pre-Japan show. And until then, everyone, have a good race weekend. We will see you all next week.